The other door leads to the castle, and this door leads to certain death.
Oh.
How do you know? He could be telling the truth.
But then you wouldn't be. So if you told me that he said yes, I know the answer is no.
But I could be telling the truth.
But then he would be lying. So if you told me that he said yes, I know the answer would still be no.
Wait a minute. Is that right?
I don't know. I've never understood it.
No, it's right. I figured it out. I can never do it before. I think I'm getting smarter. It's a piece of cake.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Tracklist Podcast Show. I am your host, Darren Jenkins.
And I'm Chris Saunders.
And on today's show, we are doing an oldie, but I'm not sure if this is a goodie. We'll guess we'll get into it. Labyrinth, the 1986 film starring David Bowie, Jennifer Connelly, and Toby Froude. Directed by Jim Henson, 16-year-old Sarah is given 13 hours to, why does this keep switching over? 13 hours to solve a labyrinth and rescue her baby brother, Toby, when her wish for him is to be taken away and is granted by the Goblin King, Jareth. Box office, $34 million, budget, $25. So they didn't make a lot of money on this movie, but okay.
No, sir. And yeah, you already laid out the question. This is an oldie, but is it a goodie? So IMDb gives it 7.3 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes critics give it 75%, which is pretty high. And yeah, the audience gives it 86%.
What?
Yeah, I feel like some of the last few we've done, it's been pretty even across the board. But this one has a bit of a disparity, 11% disparity between critics and audience and Rotten Tomatoes. So this, for me, already qualified as a cult classic. I don't know if the disparity is enough to qualify that comment. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a pretty big disparity. It's still cult. Well, apparently it's a cult classic. So, I mean, you know.
I mean, so I think this is one of my suggestions.
So I have you to blame.
Listen, I mean, it was interesting watching this game. I definitely have watched this one in the last few years. From my childhood. My mom, you know, was probably like most people from her generation, was a big Bowie fan. So that's probably why it was shown to us in the first place. But like Jim Henson, arguably the best puppeteer in cinematic history.
Yeah.
And you really get a great sense of that in this film. And like, I said, this is like, it was more childish than I recall.
Mm-hmm.
But that's in large part because Jim Henson's creations are very often pretty dark.
Yeah. Yeah. He's right. I feel like him and Guillermo del Toro went to the same, you know, class or something on cinematic, you know, design.
Well, I don't, because Guillermo del Toro is more contemporary, right? Maybe he got a lot of what he does from.
Yeah.
Let's see. Henson is born in 1936, died in 1990. And Guillermo, let's see, 1936 and 1964. So there's a 30-year gap there. So there's definitely inspiration coming from Jim Henson to what Guillermo does. And Guillermo has definitely taken it to another level.
Yeah.
Like, his stuff is just visually stunning and beautiful.
I would probably put a Tim Robbins in that category too. Probably he's probably in that class of like these very eclectic, dark, yet like dark children's stories. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
Tim Robbins.
Yeah.
Like
is there Beetlejuice a... and I'm sorry, Danny Elfman. Sorry.
Oh well, Danny Elfman's composer. You're talking about I know who you're talking about.
Tim Roth.
No.
Who did Beetlejuice?
Tim Roth is the bad guy Hulk. It's gonna drive me nuts now. I don't know. We should both know. Tim Burton. There we go.
Tim Burton. Yeah, we should both. That's a damn shame.
Yeah. Listen, man. It's late on a Thursday.
But yeah, I mean, the point being is that yeah, they're all kind of in this dark children's story realm, and like that is like they make the kind of content where you're questioning whether you should bring your kids or not, because you know, just they can, like one move either way can either be super childish or really dark.
Yeah, and I think at some point, like this movie starts out to me pretty adult, and then it just takes a sharp turn to children's film. A third of the way through or halfway through. So
yeah, there's a, you know, when we get to the what the fuck moments, yeah, I have some questions that will impact our view of this film, like right from the beginning. But it was so. The first thing we see is Jennifer Connelly, who, be honest, I totally forgot was in this movie. And I was like, wow, is that Jennifer Connelly? She looks like her, but she doesn't look like her, but
I mean, so in this film, so she was born in 1970, so she's 16 years old in this film.
Yeah.
So she's real young, it's understandable. I could criticize her for overacting in this movie, but I think she gets a pass based on the type of film it is. I think it required that, but like, it would be very hard to. If this was a dramatic role, it would be very hard to see how she got any roles after this.
I swear, I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, are we sure this is her? Because if I were a casting agent after this, I'm like, nah, we're good.
Well, which what point in her career was this film? Let's see. 1986 Labyrinth. She had done about six things before this. One was a Duran Duran video.
What?
Yeah, Union of the Snake.
She was in Union of the Snake?
Underground cult member.
Oh,
uncredited.
God.
Uncredited.
Oh, uncredited. Oh, okay. Oof.
So she was in another music video, something called Phenomena. So yeah, so this was actually her biggest, probably her biggest role.
Wow.
In her career to this point.
Wow. And she made it despite.
Oh, okay. Then her next one was The Rocketeer. So she was on a roll there.
Woo. Questioning her choices.
Talk about an underdog story.
Yeah, I mean, damn. she should thank every time she gets a new role, she should like pray to whatever God was around, like with her during that time, that she still got a job. She's gotten obviously better, you know.
Yeah, but she was in this with David Bowie.
Yeah,
probably a huge star, right? Probably right behind Madonna, you know. Around, I mean, well, he was pre-Madonna, but like as far as notoriety, he's in that area, right?
Oh yeah, he was what I would call one of the top 10 artists on MTV at that point in time.
Mm-hmm. And I love the opening the title song here. I think it was kind of cut up. It wasn't like the straight song, but I think it's Underground.
Yeah.
And I get like these Flash Gordon vibes with the score that's going on right before that. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's just nostalgia. But there's a, you know, I mean, that's the time growing up when I, you know, started watching movies, right? Like 86 was a bit early, but, you know, a little bit after that. And I'm just, you know, throughout the film, and even in the score, I'm hearing like Flash Gordon. Like I hear Ghostbusters. I hear Beverly Hills Cop, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I'm just like, man, it's just bringing me back, man. Every note is something different.
Yeah. There was this definitely was a signature, like it just had all the signatures for some of the best 80s like movies and even TV programs. There was a few I was like, oh, I hear a little Knight Rider up in that piece. So you know.
Yeah, I could definitely hear that. Cuz they have a lot of synth in this in this movie. Well, the composer is Trevor Jones, and he has done other things like Arachnophobia, Last of the Mohicans, one of my all-time favorites, Cliffhanger.
Oh, wow.
And a film we talked about in one of our last podcasts, Notting Hill.
No way. Really?
Dude, he's all over the place. We got Arachnophobia, like a sci-fi horror. We've got Last of the Mohicans, drama, epic. We've got Cliffhanger, action, and Notting Hill, rom-com. I mean,
wow,
he's run the gamut here.
Okay.
But I loved the sounds that came out of Trevor Jones throughout this movie, man. It just like took me back. Gave me like, I don't know, got me like, I was in the scenes when the music was playing.
Really? Okay. I mean, it was nostalgic. It was definitely a nostalgic type experience for me, is hearing like, especially when you hear the, you know, the synths and the, of the 80s, that I mean, there's so many. I mean, it actually reminded me the most of the Conan series. There was a lot of Conan in that. If you listen to the Conan soundtrack, some of the synths sound like they just picked up and carried over to Labyrinth. So,
was it the same? Was it similar sounding to the Conan movies, or just completely?
Yeah, different? The Conan movies. Yeah.
Oh, not the, you said series. Okay. I thought you meant like streaming.
Yeah, no, I meant the ones, the Schwarzenegger triumvirate. So.
Man, I don't remember the sounds coming out of that.
Huh.
I'll have to rewatch it.
Yeah, that and Red Sonja.
Dude, I haven't seen that, but I saw it on, it was on one of these streaming platforms, and I was like, I looked into it, I was like, oh my God. Do I need to see this? Do I need to watch this?
Hurry up, because they're remaking it with I forget who, some big star agreed to do it. I forget who it was. It might have been Jennifer Connelly.
What? Oh,
I forget who it is, but someone just agreed to do it. So and
dude, I would be surprised if it was Gal Gadot.
God, please hope not.
I mean, like, you know, if I want like a barbarian action fighter, I want them to be like ripped. So I don't need a skinny model person running around kicking everybody's asses. Did you know, I saw the, we talking about the opening song and the title sequence. It's on IMDb trivia that the owl in the title sequence is computer generated, the first attempt at a photorealistic CGI animal character in a feature film.
Wow.
Which is really cool.
I remember when this movie came, like when they were making this movie, there was a whole bunch of conversation about all these new things that Jim Henson was trying to do with animatronics, with CGI, all these different. So I'm not really surprised that he tried to pull that one off.
I mean, I would say he pulled it off. I think it was a great, because the trivia says attempt, the first attempt. I would say it was a great attempt.
Yeah.
I think it succeeded as far as it needed to. This owl doesn't show up that much in the film. But then you compare it to like Clash of the Titans.
Oh, right. You know, the original the metallic owl that they had was like stop motion.
Yeah. Which honestly, putting everything in context of time, like that was awesome. I think the owl here was awesome. Kids today will probably be like, oh my God, that is so terrible. You know, like they would fucking shit on it. But in context, I think it's all amazing.
Yeah. I mean, for that moment in time, it was groundbreaking. So, you know, everything's, I mean, even car chases to some extent, I mean, have aged, you know, but like, you know, we do the James Bond podcast, the 007 podcast, and we talk about different stunts that they have in the films, and some of the best stunts we've ever seen on the in any of those films are ones that were done way back in the 70s and 80s. So, you know, it's all relative. It's all relative.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mention that. We should probably save this for the Bond podcast, but like, yeah, it's amazing. I don't know. I guess it's just hard to redo things, and you know, but. Yeah, the things I think we've got given the best response to have been from the Sean Connery and like even Roger Moore films.
Yep.
As far as those stunts go, so hey, you young bucks, don't be sleeping on them old films, man.
That's right.
I got a question for you. Is that the same baby from Ghostbusters 2?
I don't know.
You know, it depends. 1989, no, that baby wouldn't be the same.
It wouldn't be a baby anymore.
Yeah.
But they just have them in storage somewhere.
Because also the Ghostbusters 2 baby were twins, just like a Full House.
Yeah. Well, that was kind of like the thing they did back in the 70s and 80s where if there was a baby on the set, 9 times out of 10, it was a twin because of the number of hours union wise, they couldn't work certain hours, like a certain number of hours. So they'd have to have 2 babies that look alike so they could swap them out.
You ever wonder what they do to these babies to make them cry? There's got to be some kind of union issues there too. Yeah, like that's one of the lyrics in the one of the songs, "Smack the Baby." Okay, so it's the it's the Magic Dance song.
Yeah,
and the lyric I thought I heard, "Slap the Baby." What was it? I'm seeing the actual lyric now, and it's fucking me up. I thought it was like slap the baby and make him like cry or something. It's actually slap the baby, make him free.
Slap the baby, make him free. What the fuck does that even mean?
Yeah. One of the goblins says that.
All
right. Anyway, so that's what I think they do to make the baby cry on cue, quote unquote.
Okay. Well,
I'm sorry. I've always wondered about this shit when they have little babies in movies and like, they're not acting. Whatever they're doing is a natural reaction.
Well, supposedly, I'm reading on the Screen Rant, they were talking about him, and they were talking about how they had to get, like, how they worked with him to get him to do different things. So, to get him, apparently, they didn't have to work too hard for getting him to cry, because he did most of that on the set all the time. And so, it was more, how do they get him not to cry? Which is, they had to use a sock puppet in order to get him to be calm. Otherwise, crying, no problem. I got it.
Well, yeah, that's this particular baby. But that leads to another question. And I know I'm getting a little off topic here. But, like, how did this baby get the role if it's crying all the time?
Yeah.
And is it abuse to have this kid on set crying all the time?
Yeah,
I just have so many questions.
He wasn't like extraordinary, so it's like, well, if this dude's crying so much, let's get another baby up in here because this one is getting on my nerves.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah. I don't know. Maybe that's questions for some other to our listeners who are in the film industry and work with babies a lot. I'd love to know.
I'd love to know if this dude went on to do anything else, actually.
He did not. I checked. This guy is in like visual effects now.
Oh, nice.
He does visual effects and special effects and shit. He's not an actor. So I guess this movie killed his career. All right. Here's a new segment of our show. It's called Pop Quiz Hotshot.
Oh, boy.
Copyright pending. This is a two-parter for you.
Okay.
One, what is the dog's name? Not the one in the imaginary land. What is Sarah's dog's name? And two, what is the name of the doll that Sarah finds in Toby's room? This is early on in the film.
I think the bear was Lancelot.
That's correct.
And I forget the damn dog's name. I remember
it's the same. It's part of the same story.
Yeah, no, I know. It was like not Lancelot. I don't know. I forget.
Merlin. The answer is Merlin.
Merlin
the wizard. I don't know why I thought to write that shit down. And also, I should have written down, because she's got a whole ton of dolls in her bedroom.
Yeah.
They probably all, like, it's probably an Arthur and a Percy. I don't know. I can't even name all this. There's a Percival, right?
Percival, yeah.
Anyway.
Well, most of those dolls are in the movie afterwards too, so
yeah which I should have looked at as well, but I guess I was just like, I don't want to pause this.
You were too dazzled by Jennifer's performance.
I was too dazzled by the Jim Henson's creations, man. That shit was amazing. This is the most creative film in cinematic history. It is amazeballs.
Okay.
Yeah, I said it here
somewhere out there. There's someone rolling their eyes.
No, everybody's nodding their heads. They agree with me. Like, for example, I love the earlier scenes in when she's in the bedroom trying to get her brother to stop crying, and the goblins. You see the goblins like
popping up all over the place.
Well, just that when they're all just under, I don't know if they're under a bed or something. They're like,
say it.
Yeah, they wanted to say, "I wish you would take my brother away." And they're like, "Did she say it?" Like, I mean, the interactions were great. I loved, like, just
like, how hard is it for you?
I absolutely, and I love, like, just the visuals of these goblins, all different, silly but scary. I just loved it, and I loved, and that goes for a bunch of the other characters. Creations in this movie later on.
Yeah, he did definitely. So for those people who have been hiding in a closet or something, Jim Henson is the creator of such notable creations as the Sesame Street, all the characters from Sesame Street, like Bert and Ernie, Big Bird, Oscar the Grouch, Cookie Monster, and up until then he'd been mostly doing a lot of that stuff, and then the Muppet Show and that kind of stuff. This was kind of a different level. He took it to a whole other level. I think before this, his probably most involved piece would have been Yoda and the characters from Star Wars, and I think that probably must have really got his juices going, and said, I wonder what I could do if I had a whole movie full of these characters. Like how much he could push the envelope. He pushed the envelope pretty far.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if to say nothing else, we usually talk about more adult films.
Yep.
On this podcast, but to say nothing else, to watch this movie for everything Jim Henson creates in it is is I mean, just, even just the ideas. Like, at one point, there's a blue worm with a red scarf.
Oh, that was hilarious.
That helps Sarah on her way. Like, what? Why is there a blue worm with a red scarf? And then that, and then the those there's two doors, and there's like a with like shields, and there's like a head on top and a head on bottom.
Yeah,
That was amazing. Like, that was just wait, where do you get this shit from? And then the helping hands. And she's falling down the hole. There's hands that are like stopping her from falling, and then she says stuff, and they respond in like the hands shape faces.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine creating something like that.
The door knockers, those are cool too.
Yeah, it's just like you have to assume he was on something, but like,
yeah. If this same movie came out right now, people would be like, first thing someone would say is, what the hell was this girl on in the movie? Like, you sure this isn't about her being on ecstasy or something, you know, her like, you know, spacing out in a room?
Well, that leads me to a couple things. It's funny you mention that. Let's bring it back to our segment. So hold up. So the goblin king appears, the baby is stolen, all these goblins are running around, and Sarah just gonna accept everything just like that? There's no like, I must be dreaming, or my stepmom put acid in my water, like nothing.
Please don't get me started on that. I was like, there's a whole bunch of shit going on right now, and
no, she's just like, oh.
Yeah.
Let me just run into this labyrinth over here that just appeared out of no, like, yeah, man. Listen, hey, they're asking us to suspend belief. Maybe she was also suspending belief. I don't know.
Well, I mean, she's kind of a fucked up individual as it goes. I mean, she did wish her brother out of existence, one. Two, while he was crying in the crib, she's busy like doing this, you know, sing something, this thing, performing or whatever. I was like, so you just not gonna go over there and check him out? What's up? You just gonna let him scream his head off? What's
she, up? She doesn't want to coddle him.
I mean, damn.
But not to mention, you said if this movie was made today, which is funny because they, I don't know if it was a remake or a, I don't know, a prequel or a sequel to The Dark Crystal.
Oh yeah, Dark Crystal. Yeah,
I didn't watch it. I don't even know where it is right now. But was originally Jim Henson, right?
Yeah.
So they Dark technically kind of remade it because those are very much they're like a cross between the Labyrinth characters and like the Muppets.
Yeah.
It's got that balance of dark and just silly.
Yeah. It's kind of like a darker version of Willow with Muppets.
Speaking of, dude, you're just like throwing lobs to me today. Speaking of Willow, I saw that Warwick Davis was in this movie.
Yeah,
but he's just kind of like a supporting character.
I guess like so.
One of the goblins or something. But usually you can hear his voice. He's got a very distinctive voice.
Yeah.
And I didn't catch it. And Willow was 2 years after this. So theoretically, if I didn't see him, if I didn't see him, I don't know if anyone else saw him, but Warwick Davis is a fucking legend.
Yes, he is.
He's in everything.
Yep.
It's absurd. What was he in? Was he in the, what was that movie that came out? It was just on Something Alley.
Something Alley.
I think it was on just on HBO. Oh, it's going to drive me nuts. Nightmare Alley. Whoa. Maybe he wasn't. I don't see him here. Everybody else was. Bradley Cooper, Kate Blanchett, Ron Perlman, Willem Dafoe.
Really?
Yeah, I thought Willow or Warwick Davis was in this one too, but I don't see him.
But he's been in a ton of stuff, though.
I need to rewatch Willow so I can start watching the series on Disney Plus.
Oh, you haven't seen that yet?
Nope. And I was, I happened to be looking away from the screen at one point, and I think it's early on when David Bowie comes in, and I was like, "Is that Tim Curry? No, is that Austin Powers?" Yeah, it is. I could have sworn Mike Myers was up there doing impressions.
He's the one guy who probably could get away with doing that.
I just thought of a question for later. Here we go.
Go ahead.
Yes. That's going to be one of our closing questions.
All right.
Yeah, we're not going to do it right now. We're going to wait. Oh, dude. Okay. Favorite character? Hoggle.
Hoggle was...
He's the one that helps her throughout.
Yeah, like, he was tight. My favorite was the what was the one the guy the last character the what was he a
sir,
dog
sir something yeah, yeah yeah
that dude was crazy dude.
I mean, you know who he reminded me of? First of all, let me get his name. Sir, where is he? Damn, he's not even that far up on the...
Something with a Y or something.
He's not even wow, listed in the first people. Anyway, he reminds me of the mouse from Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. It wasn't even the first one.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe have been the last one. The Dawn Treader one.
Oh, wait, which character?
The mouse.
The mouse. Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's a bunch of mice, but there's one mouse that goes, like, to the end, and he gets his tail cut off, but he's like a...
He's got the sword.
King's Guard or something, yeah. Remind me a little bit overzealous about his duty.
Yeah.
But I like Toggle, man, because the first time we see him, he's like... He's spraying, I don't know, pesticides at fairies.
Was that what he was doing? I thought he was peeing in the water.
Oh, no, yeah. That was actually the first thing he was doing. That is a good point. I kind of just, and again, this is supposed to be a kid's film, right? This dude was peeing in the water. This is why I have a question mark about this film. But proceeding that, he's like spraying like pesticides into fairies and killing them. And he gets one. He kicks dirt over it after he's never falls to the ground. It's amazing. This is my favorite character. Hoggle.
Oh, and that dog, his name is Didymus. Yeah, there were some... I mean, the characters were... Like, I was... They were so good. And his animation, his animatronic work is so good. I had a hard time trying to separate, like, the ones that were clearly being worked with multiple controllers and ones that had actual people.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I don't know if you could tell the difference in a lot of times.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty seamless.
Yeah,
and again, you know, that's why, regardless of, you know, what demographic this movie is meant for, like, it's amazing. It really is a feat. Storyline might not be amazing, the acting might not be amazing, but the effects, the costume design, and the character design are all insane.
Speaking of that, wonder was this nominated for any awards for effects in costume design?
My God, it's only not enough. Nominated for four nominations, no wins. That's insane. Nominated for a BAFTA Awards Best Special Visual Effects. Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror Films, nominated for Best Costumes and Best Fantasy Film.
Right.
And the Hugo Awards, no idea what that is. Best Dramatic Presentation, no idea what that means.
Hugo is for animation. It's like the Oscars for animation.
Okay. Best Dramatic Presentation. I don't, I would just... It wasn't even in the Academy Awards, the Golden Globes.
Yeah.
That seems crazy to me.
I'm looking at what won for animated. I don't even know what the hell this is. Anna and Bella. Special effects was... Doesn't say, but... I don't recall anything being even close to this coming out in 86. That's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm like... I'm actually taking this personally right now, and I have nothing to do with the film. Wow, that would qualify as a snub in my mind.
Yeah. I mean, special effects. You gotta be kidding me! Cocoon.
I mean, that wasn't a bad...
No, it's not a bad film at all, but come on, man.
Man, I used to be freaked out by that movie.
Cocoon? I still haven't watched it again because it freaks me out, man. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, okay.
Creepy-ass movie.
I don't know if I can support that.
Well, I don't know what to tell you, man. Maybe
every scene in this film has something new, something different, something it's just interesting. Cocoon, I can only remember like one or two scenes where it's like, ooh.
Yeah, it's the Oscars. I guess we shouldn't be surprised, to be honest. So.
Oh man, so I spoke about that blue worm with the red scarf earlier.
Yeah.
That scene, man. That because so he the worm shows Sarah the way, and it's that illusion where the wall looks solid, but it's,
oh yeah, sure.
It's just this illusion, and like she steps forward and like essentially I say through it, but it's just like it's just an illusion. I can't really describe it properly, but like it's not a solid wall. There's actually a pathway behind there. Man, that was I thought that was dope as well. Like, I don't know, everything about this, the creativity, the storytelling.
Yeah.
Just I don't know. I'm not a kid. I'm 41, but it still blew me away.
They did that same special effects in one of the Indiana Jones movies.
Indiana Jones 3, when the leap of faith.
Yeah.
Exactly. They stole it.
God damn you. But yeah, that was dope. It was, I mean, if I were her, I'd feel a little foolish because, I mean, the worm's like, there have been openings all along the wall. You just haven't looked at the scene. So
you stupid. Man, Indiana Jones is only 3 years after this movie.
Yeah. So
it's actually making me really depressed. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade was 1989.
Yeah.
1989.
And yet he lives still as the new one comes out this year. This summer, I believe.
Mm-hmm. They should have waited. Well, they should have done it in 2019 or waited until 2029 to make it a solid 40 years.
Not just the animatronics, but the actual set design was really dope. Especially, the maze and,
everything. The forest scene, which reminded me of Princess Bride.
Yeah, there was a little bit of Princess Bride in this.
I mean, just everything. Like, there's just these little, there's just different parts of the maze. Like, there's just like these little hedges, right? It's not like an actual labyrinth. It's just like hedges placed here and there that they walk through. Again, just like some of the doors, like you said, the knockers, and then the two-headed people, like all of that stuff that surrounds it is amazing. Even the scene where they, what's the big monster's name?
Ludo.
Ludo. Even where the scene where they find him being attacked by the guards. Oh man, yeah. It just, I think just the creativity alone, this is captivating.
Yeah, yeah.
And you get that sense of like Alice in Wonderland.
Speaking of Alice, well, you know, Jennifer Connelly almost didn't get this role. There were a few other actresses who were considered first for it. Helena Bonham Carter and Ally Sheedy to be...
Ally Sheedy.
Yeah. Jane Krakowski, who mostly been doing comedy up until that point in time. But they chose her, but the reason only they chose her is because she was the she was American. That was really it. So,
well, it's funny. It's, Ally Sheedy had just come off of Breakfast Club the previous year. I'm surprised she didn't get chosen for it.
Yeah, me too.
Maybe because she was so too dark in that film, and this had to be more of a princess.
Yeah, maybe, or you know, maybe they didn't think people would buy her as a 16-year-old, with like this fantasy world around her. You know, she because her character in the Breakfast Club was pretty dark.
Well, this begs the question: Molly Ringwald.
Interesting. Meh. She could have played it. She had to, but yeah, I don't think you win anything more with her in it than Jennifer Connelly. So, would have been nice perhaps if they had the Miss Piggy in the movie,
doing her karate moves.
Yeah,
taking out guards left and right.
Yeah.
I mean. So actually, so one of my questions, which is, so David Bowie really just had to be himself in this movie, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. I mean, which, like, in the early piece of the film, I didn't really enjoy it that much. But, like, as he got, for like, once he got into the maze, I actually liked him very much in it.
Well, I mentioned that Jennifer Connelly was 16 when they made this movie.
Yeah.
David Bowie was 39.
Yeah.
There's a bit of a attraction apparently in this movie.
Oh, that's not creepy at all.
Yeah, it's pretty creepy. I mean, like, David Bowie looks creepy as is.
Right. Yeah.
This did not help.
Yeah. You know, Michael Jackson and Mick Jagger both had interest in that role.
Well, I think they were considered for it, too.
Yeah.
Prince, Mick Jagger, Michael Jackson. Jim Henson preferred Sting. But his kids convinced him that David Bowie, who just released the Let's Dance album, probably. I mean, I don't know. That's a tough one. I mean, Sting.
Wow.
Actually, you know, man, I'm gonna let me another question. we'll do that at the end, but yeah. So there was some folks in the running there, and
yeah.
And it looked like David Bowie also wanted to do a kids movie at the time. So I guess stars aligned.
Yeah. Yeah. I looked to see like what he was doing around 86, because Like, he was in between. He was actually kind of in between release album releases, because Tonight came out in 84 and Never Let Me Down came out in 87. So he had time. Yeah, he was available.
Did you notice the first Iron Man suit in this movie?
The what?
The first Iron Man suit.
Yeah, I actually sat there. I was like, wait, so hold up. Did they just rip off Iron Man's first Iron Man suit?
Mm-hmm.
The Hulkbuster.
Yeah, exactly. It was the Hulkbuster. So you got to watch the first movie, the actual first movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Labyrinth.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. But overall, you know, again, very much nostalgic, which is, you know, probably a big part of why I enjoy. I'm not going to watch it all the time, but I enjoy it. It is the coming of age stories. Remember, you had like Never Ending Story, from my childhood, The Goonies,
yeah.
Where these kids go on like these adventures, these wild adventures. Yeah. And then like even more recent, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and that series of films where it's like almost definitely these fantasy, but these like dreamlike scenarios. Yeah. Like even Goonies, like it's based in reality, but they kind of go on this adventure that like no kid would ever go on, right?
Right.
And you know, like as a kid, you know, you're like, you definitely get pulled into that, yeah. Especially when it's like a live action film, like not animation. This had puppeteering and everything, but it's, you know, the main character is a person.
It's like bringing the storybooks alive, you know. It's kind of like the equivalent to the Marvel Universe, where they've taken like these things that used to live in books and brought them to life. The 80s, they were doing that long before that in the 80s with like children's stories. So
I'm trying to think of other movies like, and again, like there's this kind of this dreamlike situation that we get with this movie where she kind of like wakes up from a dream.
Right.
Similar to like Never Ending Story. I was trying to think of other movies like that from like the 80s, 90s, early 90s. But I couldn't think of anything.
Outside of Willow. There was another one about a dragon. I forget what it was. Does Black Knight count?
Black Knight? Dude, I can't.
It's the Martin Lawrence movie.
Oh, no, that does not count.
No?
Because, well, I'm also thinking about, like, you know, kids that are pulled into these adventures.
Oh, I thought you meant, you know. Yeah. That was Never Ending Story. What's the one that Tom Cruise was in?
Did you come up with one?
Oh, yeah, there's a ton. Princess Bride.
All right, let's do that. Let's start there. You can kick it off.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's Princess Bride, there's Labyrinth, which we're doing. There's, what's the other one? Never Ending Story.
Flight of the Navigator. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that was a good one. I mean, even like Princess Bride is like sort of, because the kid is not in the adventure, but they're reading the story. I mean, I wish we could do that one. It doesn't really have a soundtrack, but yeah. I love Princess Bride.
Oh, Legend.
Yeah. Wait, is that Jennifer Connelly again? No.
No, but that's Tom Cruise and...
I know it's Tom Cruise. Emily Browning.
Yeah, Emily Browning. Yeah.
Oh no! Sorry, this looks like they're Oh, there's a legend from 2015. That's something else.
Tom Cruise, Mia Sara, Tim Curry, David Bennett.
Oh, that came out in 85, so a year before this.
Yeah, that was actually pretty good. Directed by Ridley Scott, so it can't be terrible.
Interesting. Mia Sara. How old was Tom Cruise when this came out?
God, he must have been... I would say he's 20-something, like maybe 2019, something like that.
He was born in 1962. And this was 1985, 62, so it's 23. He was 23. Yeah. How old was Mia Sara?
He was actually 22. Mia Sara, she had to be.
Trying to see if they qualify as kids.
She was 16.
There you go. So she was the same age as Jennifer Connelly was when she made Labyrinth. Okay, good. That's the one right there. I have not seen Legend in so long. It's insane. Yeah. Tim Curry.
Woo! I was gonna say, the scene of a Tim Curry by itself is enough. And his the main bad guy in that, I feel like, inspired so many other characters cross film after that. So.
My computer is very slow. Anyway, so we do have, this is not a massive soundtrack,
right,
by any means, but the music is performed and like danced to in the actual film, right? It's not like background stuff. It's not mood setting stuff. We talked about the opening credits song Underground, which starts with like, but has an amazing like line to me, which is just, it's only forever. That just hit me right away. Which is also interesting for, again, we talked about coming of age stories. And at the end of this film, Sara is saying goodbye to all the characters from the adventure, which are also her dolls. Right, like she has to grow up is essentially what's happening. Right, yeah. She's 16 and playing with dolls. Like it's that moment where you're like, oh, I need to, you know, become an adult or start becoming an adult. So it's interesting. They have this song called Underground that has a line called saying it's only forever, which can be interpreted different ways. Like, you know, you get to be a kid forever, or you're never going to be a kid again. That's forever. I don't know. It's interesting. It just hit me. And then we talked about the magic dance that had the line "slap the baby, make him free." Interesting. And my what the fuck moment, it's the song is called "Chili Down," but the fire gang scene.
Oh yeah.
Did you sense a little Caribbean accents in some of them?
Yeah, those dudes were. They looked like they were just stepped off the boat from the Caribbean, man.
Well, they were falling apart. Their legs coming off, heads coming off, eyes popping out. What the fuck? That's exactly why we have this segment in our show. Hey.
You saw, I posted that on Instagram. I was like, what is going on here?
I didn't see that.
Yeah, it's on our Instagram story. I was like, oh, okay.
There it is. You should have tagged me so I could repost it.
I'll do that. I mean, that's just wrong.
Dude, my God. And, well, I mean, it's not like the song is supposed to make sense, but.
But still.
When the sun goes down and the bands are back to back, the brothers come round. I get out of my dirty bit. What? This can't be the same song. Chili Down with Fire Gang. Tink Small with Fire Gang. Bedheads and the Fire Gang. Hey, oh my, I can't even read this. This is nonsensical.
Yeah.
So that was my what the fuck moment. Did you have a what the fuck moment? Did I steal it?
No, that was one of them. But I mean, my what the fuck moment came in the beginning of the movie. It actually was the reason why this whole movie existed. She is 16 years the fuck old, man. I was like, they're telling her story in the whole bit. I stopped the movie and reread the description of this movie because I was like, wait, is she 16 and she's in her room playing with dolls? Mm-hmm. She's 16 and then she's in her room playing a doll. Something's wrong with the girl. She got drugs. She on drugs.
It was an innocent time, Darren.
Innocent.
Eighties was innocent time. It's not like today.
Excuse me.
Kids done.
Excuse me.
What?
No. I'm from the 80s.
No, you're not.
Her age, I was over in the clubs, man, partying.
She's 80s.
Yeah, man. What? So I was like, what the fuck? But then, of course, you know. I mean, and it just starts off with a what the fuck moment with the fact that her brother's in the, I said before, her brother's in the crib crying. And she's busy just telling her story. I'm just like, all right.
Well, Darren, you texted me what the fuck while we were both watching the movie. So,
yeah.
By the way, folks, we have never done this before. We were just talking on the phone earlier today, and we were like, let's do a podcast. Which one? And we settled on Labyrinth. And we decided we're going to watch it at the same time, and we're going to jump right on this podcast. So you're getting fresh perspectives.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, yeah.
So I would say your what the fuck moment is like the whole thing.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Dude, I did not write down any quotes. Do you have any quotes?
I did not write down any quotes.
Okay, not just me. So I don't know what that means.
It doesn't mean anything. Because to me, the best quotes kind of technically come in the songs. The Bowie songs. For me,
like slap that baby, make him free.
Well, I wouldn't say that one, but yeah, you got kind of the hint. Yeah.
Yeah. That's all I got. But anyway, we were actually talking about the soundtrack. There's only two. I mentioned three songs. There's only two more. As the World Falls Down, which is like the ball dancing scene.
Yep.
And then Within You, which is that, we haven't talked about the staircase scene, like the final scene.
Oh, that was trippy.
So I didn't want to mention set design, but until now, but damn.
Yeah. And the special effect, I mean, just.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Amazing, amazing scene. The song playing during it is Within You, which. Again, it's this 39-year-old man singing to a 16-year-old. But, you know, it's fine.
Yeah, sure.
But it's this very short song. How you turn my world, you precious thing, you starve and near exhaust me. Everything I've done for you. I move the stars for no one. You've run so long, you've run so far, your eyes can be so cruel, just as I can be so cruel. Oh, I believe in you. Yes, I do. Live without you, without your sunlight, love without your heartbeat. I can't live within you. That's essentially it. That's a beautiful poem, man.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful poem. Well, let's just not look at it.
Oh, don't look at that part. Oh, okay.
Let's just forget about that for a second. But the piece itself is, that's amazing, man.
The scene made me think of Yellow Submarine.
I've got a hole in my pocket.
Yeah, it was very Yellow Submarine-ish in like this very surreal, you know,
yeah.
Like this easily could have been an animated segment of this film if they did this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And another film where the creators must have been on meth or acid or something.
Yeah, they were on something.
And which we have also covered on The Download, so please check that one out too.
Yep.
So are you ready for final questions here?
Sure, why not?
So again, I'm making one up. You mentioned that Michael Jackson, Prince, Mick Jagger, Sting were all considered for this role. I would like to pick out Sting. Do you think Sting would have been good in this role as the Goblin King?
Wow, that's a hard one. Are we talking about the Sting of that era, of the police era, the young Sting, or the elder statesman from, you know, Dream of the Blue Turtles?
I don't think it matters.
Okay. I don't think he. I be honest. I mean, Bowie's so specific. He's so different than most artists. Like, I think the only one that comes close to him is maybe Prince when it comes to like the kind of energy he gives off. No, I don't think he would have made it better.
Prince would have made it too sexy.
Yeah, Prince. Yeah, they would have been like, it would have been an R-rated movie at that point.
Michael and Jackson
had to play, you know, the lead role, Sarah.
I mean, Michael Jackson doesn't have the acting chops. I don't think Mick Jagger did either, but Mick Jagger at least like looks weird enough.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. David Bowie had the right combination, I think.
Yeah.
But what about, because we've mentioned his name a couple of times, what about Tim Curry?
Oh, Tim Curry would have made it 100% better.
Not to mention, he was in a musical, the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh, yeah.
So you know you get the dancing and singing from him.
Yeah. And he's a, I mean, no disrespect to Bowie, you're a great musician, great songwriter and performer. But when it comes to acting, you're no Tim Curry.
Yeah, that guy got some.
Mm-hmm.
Love me some Tim Curry. we mentioned Legend, even in Home Alone 2.
Yeah, look, just the most insignificant things, he just makes better. He might be one of the best character actors of all time.
I love him in Clue.
Yeah.
I wish Clue had a soundtrack too. Actually, yeah. It kind of has a small one, but it's all from the 1920s.
We should find some Tim Curry something and do. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I've never really watched Rocky Horror Picture Show from beginning to end. So.
Oh God, I've seen it so many times. I don't even know.
I got a second question for you, which is.
Yep.
Should they or could they remake this movie today?
Could they? Yes, they could absolutely. I mean, from the technology standpoint, animation.
Imagine Guillermo del Toro recreating Labyrinth.
Oh, it would be significantly darker, I think, too. Because he's kind of crazy. Should they do it? No. Can they do it? Yes. But should they do it? No.
I don't know. I feel like, yeah, I don't. I think on a, well, because of Jim Henson, though, but,
right,
you know, like, I feel like maybe you could throw in Del Toro and then have like a Harry Styles playing the Goblin King, you know?
Well, the women would love that for sure. So,
just a thought.
Okay.
So, all right. So, do you have a favorite song or one and one or and or I'll, you don't have to answer both if you don't want to, but favorite song or one you think encompasses the film?
I don't know if I have like so. There were two songs that for me that I liked the most. The first one, I think you talked about a little earlier, Underground. I thought that was just, it was both like so Bowie-esque and very 80s. So it was really kind of cool to hear that combination in this movie. And then the other one for me was the one that was at the end of the movie when he's singing to her in the castle within you. I love that song. I thought that was great. Yeah. But I don't know if either one, well, maybe Within You is probably the one that fits the movie the most.
Man, I always remember, I thought it was called something else, Underground, from like when I watched this when I was a kid. I did remember it incorrectly. Like, I always remember, like, this part of it going, like, get me out of here. Definitely didn't go like that. It's sung completely differently, which is really strange. But, yeah, I mean, even just some of the lyrics of this one. I mean, again, I said it's only forever, not long at all. Lost and Lonely, that's Underground. I just love that. It's only forever, not long at all.
Yeah.
I don't know if these were specifically written. I assume they were specifically written for this movie, but Bowie has that very trivial way of writing.
Yeah.
That it does almost doesn't seem like it. But I would probably say Underground is my favorite and fits the film.
Coming to get you. Okay. I mean, yeah, it's a good song. It's definitely a good song. It's almost sad that they kind of put it up front in the movie because it feels like it should be in a more significant piece of the film. So, but it is what it is.
Yes, sir. So out of 10, what do you rate in this film?
This was a hard one to rate because David Bowie, I got mad respect for. But there are a lot of things going on in this movie where I'm just like, you know, you shouldn't be doing that. I'm going to give this 6.5.
It's
not quite a 7.
So wait, you never watched this when you were younger?
No, this was the first time I ever watched it.
I think that explains a lot. to watch this for the first time, I don't know. I would love to actually watch this for the first time now, just to. But I give it a 6.5. Man, I'm gonna rate higher than you this time.
Whoa.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a 7.5.
Damn. Okay.
Well, I mean, listen, like a lot of that's carried by the nostalgia and Jim Henson's effects.
Yeah.
But that's such a big. That's all. Like, the effects are 90% of this film anyway, right?
Yep.
Like, we didn't write down any quotes. Like, there wasn't. You know, the dialogue was. I wouldn't say it was bad. I think it was just fine. Like, it fit the story. The story was kind of cool. The acting subpar, but like the effects are really what shines. And it's based on that, and of course, growing up with this film, I give it 7.5.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's a first. This will probably never happen again. So mark the calendar down.
Boy, are you crazy? I've been rating some stuff higher than you before.
I'd like to see which ones those were. I'm currently actually, I'm going through all our podcasts and I'm marking down our ratings so we can keep track of stuff. So check back with me next week and you'll find out just which ones you've hit. Not so much so far, not that many.
Well, I just have more of a critical eye than you do, that's all.
Yeah, okay.
By the way, this is IMDb trivia. This is the final theatrical movie directed by Jim Henson.
Yeah, that I knew, unfortunately. He got sick after that.
There are pictures of David Bowie on Sarah's mirror alongside a model of the figure of King Jareth on the vanity in Sarah's room.
Yeah, she takes it out. When she comes back, she takes it, puts it in, looks at it, and puts it back in her drawer. If you
see. So actually, that was a big question I had. What is the story she's reading and acting from in the beginning of the film and referencing? Is this an actual book?
That's a good question.
Is it like Princess Bride? It's an actual book in the film?
That's a good question.
Anyway. I mean, so, well, you got 6.5. So, I mean, did you enjoy this at all? It sounds like you had appreciation for the effects.
I definitely, I mean, Jim Henson is great, man. I mean, if you don't love Jim Henson's work, something's wrong with you, you know? So I definitely enjoyed finally seeing this.
I'm surprised. I mean, well, I'm not, because of the box office numbers that we pulled up, but it is a cult classic. I could have sworn it was more than just me remembering it from childhood, but anyway, if you haven't seen this, absolutely go watch it. It's a visual spectacle. And I think, you know, maybe when your kids are 7, is that a good age? Again, the puppetry is quite dark, but
16.
No, I think you were just criticizing Sarah playing with dolls at that age.
Oh, my bad.
So, and I saw
the book. It is a book. It's an actual book by Kate Moss.
The model?
No. Can you imagine? I'm a Victoria's Secrets model.
Dressing up like the Goblin King. So I saw that you had you just scheduled another networking event.
Yeah. Another one coming on the 27th. And then I'm working on another one after that, which would be the first one I'm doing outside of the globe. So it'll be in Brooklyn at this production studio called Planet X. Shout outs to Darren Friedman and his peoples there at planetx.life.
That's awesome. Also someone that was at your last networking event. So, I mean, people check out these networking events. I've seen a lot of connections made. I've made connections. It's really fun event for film, TV, even musicians such as myself. So,
yeah, it's picking up steam. Actually, someone wrote me today, literally before I even started posting up for the event. Someone wrote me and was like, "Hey, are you doing an event this month? Because if you are, I'm in a meeting at my company right now, and I want to tell my employees to go." I'm like, "Oh, okay. Yeah, we're doing an event." And they bought their tickets. They bought tickets already.
Boom. Yeah. That's awesome.
How about yourself, sir? You got stuff coming up soon.
Yeah. I've actually got 2 shows in April. Wait for it. Free shows in April. So,
yay, free is good.
Now these first ones, April 1st at 5 p.m. at Rockwood Music Hall, Stage 1. Because it's so early, kids are allowed. So if your kids are into music, bring them by. It's a small venue, so, you know, we can't have 50 people in there, but, you know, And then the second one is Sylvana, Uptown, Harlem, at 7 p.m. So both of those are Saturdays. Sylvana is a great spot. They got food, drinks. I think they got hookah. and it's a really cool little spot. No, oh my God. It's a really cool spot. So, you know, swing by both. It's going to be a good time. The first one I'll be playing solo. The second one I'll be playing with my drummer, Jet Carter, who will be on Cajon with me. So, man, it's going to be some cool vibes. Yeah, it's going to be some cool vibes.
Yeah, I like Sylvana. I like when you guys do that kind of, you know, two-man show type thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, the last time I played there, my cousin was in town, and he jumped up on stage with us for a few songs.
That was the last time you played there?
Yeah, he was in from England, so that was a really fun thing to have him perform with me in New York, where I had never seen him before. So, yeah, maybe we can recreate some of that magic with somebody else.
Spoons.
Yes, Darren Jenkins on the spoon.
All right. Cool. Well, that's cool. And of course, people can, if you for some reason missed what he just said, you can follow him on Chris_Saunders_music on Instagram, and me at the Darren Jenkins on Instagram. We're both on Instagram.
The Darren Jenkins.
There's only one, except for the other 30 million that's probably out there.
They don't matter.
Yeah, whatever. All right. Well, I guess that's it.
And to follow us at download podcast show, or are we going to the track list podcast show?
You'll follow us at the track list.
Just the track list.
I know, because we're so special now. We don't need all this other stuff on there. So.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. This was fun. We should do this again, like spontaneously.
Absolutely.
That would be fun. Be cool if we can get a guest to come on and do it the same
day. Spontaneously. Yeah, just call up the same day. Yo, check it out right now. Yeah. Go. Yeah, let's do it.
All right, everyone. Well, that wraps it up for us. Look for us on our new Instagram at the track list. We'll be the track list on Facebook, track list on YouTube. Will be the track list. Hope you love it. Until then, I am Darren Jenkins.
And I'm Chris Saunders.
And this was the track list. That's actually better. Okay. All right, people. See you when we see you.
You got to play it like we planned it, bro.